Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Well, hello, White Sox fans, and welcome to another edition of the Future Sox Podcast. My name is Ian Eskridge. Joining me, as always, Mr. James Fox. How are you, James?
Good, man. How's it going?
Going pretty well. Been watching playoff games a little bit, and
Didn't have to watch football today. I mean, I enjoy it, but you know, our teams are on the bye week.
Yeah, I slept through the majority of the first game.
First game started at like 8 o'clock in the morning.
Well, not even. I obviously slept through that one.
Did you see the quarterback matchup in that one by any chance?
No, I didn't pay attention.
Oh my! It was Browns Vikings. So the Vikings have Carson Wentz playing, who got hurt during the game, and some other person came in, Brosman or something. And then the Browns started Dylan Gabriel, who's a third round rookie out of Oregon. So it was ugly. That's what we're subjecting the people from London to this. This is NFL football. Not really. Somebody's there next week too. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't pay attention to football nearly as much as I do baseball, so it's like football's just kind of like in the background for me.
Yeah,
you know,
Kevin. Ian's gonna agree with you. I'm sure he can go on about this.
Yes, I don't mind this at all. Kevin brings up watching the Yankees get their faces punched loose, and I don't mind that at all. It's been kind of fun.
So I thought something rather interesting. Like I said, I don't know if you saw, like, J.J. Cooper had a tweet about how it used to just, like, the draft is niche, right? The baseball draft, and it's for hardcore guys like us and whatever. Did you see this tweet that he had? And he brought up how that's, like, changing because Treya Savage was a first-round pick in 2024, and he's pitching in the playoffs in 2025. So, and then
and
there was, like,
fantastic.
And there were, like, some tweets about, like, just like some of these college guys that are in the big leagues within 2 years. So how it's like
Schlittler
much closer. It's like much closer to like the drafts and some of the other sports. I mean, obviously the difference is like you could take high school guys, right? And then that path is longer. But like some of these guys at major college programs, it just doesn't take that long anymore.
Yeah, no, it's, I didn't really know like too much. Like I haven't paid too much attention to the Yankees, but Schlittler looked fantastic the other night. And Savage obviously looked phenomenal as well. So it's interesting, at least, you know.
Yeah, the Yankees do this. I mean, they always pick in the late 20s, and they always have pitching. Like, they do a great job of drafting college pitchers in, like, rounds, like, 2 through 10. And then they just turn. You know, like, they have guys taken in the Rule 5 every year. They have guys to trade at the deadline that are Rule 5 eligible every year. It's just, like, one of their things.
Yeah. Yep, and it's like I always talk about the Yankee prospect overhype. but they do generally seem to find at least a pitcher or two every year that seems to be halfway decent. So,
yeah, I mean, when you have like, I mean, what is it, Michael? You have Michael Kings and Drew Thorpes just like laying around that you don't necessarily need urgently. Like, it allows you to go get like a year of Juan Soto, basically.
Yeah. So last week we had Kyle Williams on, and the next day after we had the conversation about the White Sox coaching staff, as the day was kind of expiring at about 6:15 or so, which to me would suggest that it was like one of those things that like out the door, they're like, oh yeah, we're just going to drop this tweet. White Sox announced they are not keeping around Ethan Katz, Marcus Thames, Jason Bourgeois, Drew Butera, and Grady Sizemore is being moved somewhere.
Yeah, I have some. I have maybe information on that, but you can keep going for now.
Yeah. Also, Sergio Santos not renewed. Your thoughts?
sorry. So, I mean, I thought we kind of teed Kyle up last week. I was just, I don't know if he was in Washington, right? But it does kind of seem like some of the beat staff was kind of told, like, hey, there might be some changes coming. I don't know that anybody saw, like, what, I think Katz is probably the surprising one. Like, it was weird. Like, Will Venable didn't get to really hire his own staff. He hired Walker McKinven, and then that Joel McKeithen, right, is the assistant hitting coach who he technically hired. But then it was weird. Like, Pedro hired coaches, and then they fired some of those coaches, and Getz hired coaches who apparently were on two-year deals, I'm guessing, that Will Venable was, like, forced to keep. And now he's just, I don't think this is anything other than, like, it's Will Venable's job, and he's going to hire his own guys. I think that's all that it is. I mean, we've talked about on this show, the Marcus Thames, like, there were rumors that Will was bringing in his own hitting coach anyway, right? And, like, Fuller didn't hire Thames. None of these guys hired Ethan Katz, even though him and Bannister, like, do have a relationship, right? So, I guess that, you know. But, I mean, look, I have no issue with him going out and hiring his own people. Like, I think it's fine. I think, you know, like, the Sizemore thing is a little bit interesting, and then, like, you will get into Sergio, obviously, too.
Yeah, I think that he kind of proved this year, Venable proved this year that he had something going. And I think that they probably got like a little bit of a, I mean, you have the thought that possibly just they don't want to fire anybody, so they just kind of let them expire on their deals. I think that, you know, maybe they gained some faith in Will Venable this year too.
Yeah. Like, I had heard from the beginning that, like, and this is like a little bit off topic, but like Chris Getz, I think, would have gotten rid of Marco Patti like immediately. Right. But he was under contract and they kept him. Cause like, it's a weird organization that falls on weird principles, right? Of like, they don't want guys working for, or, you know, home getting paid for doing nothing, even if it's a sunk cost and you could get somebody better, like whatever. Right. So I'm assuming that's what it was this time. It was like, hey, Will, like, thank you for choosing us, like, but you got to like keep these coaches for a year and then we'll pivot type of thing. I'm pretty sure that's what happened. But also I think that they're consolidating some of the responsibilities, and I don't want that to come off as like, they're just like being cheap and don't want coaches. Cause like, we'll see here. But I mean, like a guy like Drew Butera, it's pretty well respected as like the catching coach, but like Walker McKinven's the catching coach, you know, like, so do you need another catching coach, right? Like, I'm pretty sure Grady Sizemore will be the big league outfield coach and the first base coach.
I thought about
that. But do you need him and Bourgeois teaching outfielders? You know what I mean? Like, it's just one of those things, right, where they said reassigned because he's in the org somewhere, but I don't think that means he's going to, like, the front office or something. I don't think he's going to go manage in Charlotte. I think he'll be on Will Venable's staff. He's just not going to be the offensive coordinator with some sort of like made up title.
Yeah, that's fair. I had actually given that some thought. I mean, I don't even think that necessarily Jason Bourgeois did a terrible job as the outfield coach. I mean, I think it's more like a talent gap there than, you know, him doing something egregious. You know, I mean, that's just,
yeah, I think he probably had a 2-year deal and they have a first base coach in house, And it was like, okay, thanks for your service type thing. The one that's interesting to me is Matt Wise, because like, was he on a 3-year deal or do they like him? That's what I mean. Like when these things happen, like, I don't know those answers.
Yeah. And we had this conversation when he was hired, is that, you know, he was with the Angels previously and
with Tony and with Phil Nevin. I always forget his name, you know, so yeah. Who knows?
And I, you know, he was one of the big guys that helped the surge of pitching talent that the Angels did have. And you see like Griffin Canning. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you saw like those guys make some improvements and make that push to the major leagues. And he was a big part of that. And the Angels, for whatever reason, decided to let go of their two pitching coaches that actually helped all the prospects get to the major leagues. Why? Yeah. I don't know. But they made a change.
Well, and like assistant pitching coach and like bullpen coach, it's, you know, it's like similar, I guess. Like, I don't know what Matt Wise was doing. Maybe they feel like Matt Wise as the assistant pitching coach or whatever, like, isn't a hindrance to who they hire. Right. So who knows? Like, I don't think he's all of a sudden going to be the pitching coach, because I think they would have just announced that if that were the case. I would think Ryan Fuller and Brian Bannister are heavily involved in this hiring process. I don't know, you know, how long it'll take, if it's like after the World Series or whatever. I don't know the rules on, you know, like announcements are kind of weird. Like Texas already named their in-house manager like right away, you know, like it's just, and then you got like multiple teams. There are lots of teams with openings. And there's what
there
like
are.
Colorado's yeah. open, like the baseball ops job, and Washington made a hire. Yeah, there's a lot of manager jobs open.
I was just thinking about that on Friday, and then another one got let go over the weekend, I think, if I remember correctly. I mean, there's quite a few managing spots open.
Well, who knows with the playoffs, like if a team gets fired or if a guy gets fired, like
yeah.
after playing a playoff game.
Yeah. So I'm gonna bring a couple of comments up here. So Adrian. Hello, Adrian. He brings up, will the assistants follow Bochy wherever he goes, or would the White Sox have any interest in the assistants, a.k.a. Donnie Ecker and Mike Maddox?
I don't know. I mean, I would imagine so. Like, they interviewed Ecker last year. I don't know what his relationship with Venable is. I have no idea. I mean, you know, the rumored name, we've brought him up before, was Cody Atkinson. He's the Rangers minor league hitting coordinator. That's a guy who's, like, buddies with Venable, that could be the hitting coach. I don't know anything about him other than, like, you know, Texas prospects are pretty good and he's friends with Will Venable. So, you know, my guess is it's somebody that's cleared by Ryan Fuller. And look, I think Ryan Fuller was a pretty good hire. I mean, we've talked a lot about, you know, just like the little bit of the offensive surge. Like, I think we could make the argument that we feel better about the offensive prospects than the pitching prospects, which I would have not thought 6 months ago. So.
I'd say I'm probably about even.
Yeah, no, I just, right. Like, I'm not down on the pitching, but I understand the people who are, like, more excited about the position players when Schultz and Smith just had the years they had, and then you saw Colson and Teal, like, do it in the big leagues, basically.
Yeah. So Kevin brings up, Santos isn't surprising. Thought he was up and coming in the org. I don't think, and, you know, James and I talked about this before stream, I don't think that it's necessarily that they don't like Sergio Santos. And we know, as Kerry mentions, that the guys absolutely love playing for Sergio. I just, you know, we kind of think that it's that he doesn't have a path to being a manager here and he wants to advance in his career. He doesn't want to be stuck in Charlotte and AAA managing a team. He wants to be on a big league staff and they're letting Will Venable make those decisions. I think it's pretty much just that simple.
Yeah, and my guess is, too, like, if you've prioritized, well, for whatever reason, right, like Justin Gershley is your third base coach, and you're prioritizing Grady Sizemore, there's really not a spot for Sergio on the big league staff here, right? So if they were up front with him, like, look, we don't really see you on Will Venable's staff, then mutually them parting ways, like, does kind of make sense, right? Because I don't even know that he'd necessarily go manage for somebody else in the minor leagues. I feel like he's going to go take a base coach job somewhere in the big leagues.
Yeah, that's kind of my thought as well. And I some people had suggested, oh, we'll bring him up as pitching coach. I don't think that he wants to be a pitching coach.
I don't either.
I think if he wanted to be a pitching coach, he would have done that already. And that would have been his area of of specialty.
Yeah, and he was a position player first.
Right. Yeah. Yep. He's a shortstop, right?
Yeah, and he couldn't hit, and he could throw. So he became a pitcher. But I don't even know if he would feel like, I don't even know if he knows how to coach pitcher. You know what I mean? Like, and maybe he does. But I don't know if he even feels comfortable like being a pitching instructor. He might not.
Yeah, I kind of think that with the way things have kind of moved in the biomechanics analytic era, I guess you could call it at this point. I don't know. Like, it's a pretty specialized thing, you know?
Yeah.
And he's not a pitching coach. So, I mean, there's that.
TJ asked about Kevin Long. So, like, I love Kevin Long. I don't know that Kevin Long comes to an org where you have a guy like Ryan Fuller. Not that they, like, wouldn't get along philosophically. I feel like Kevin Long is, like, when you hire Kevin Long, it's like he's the top opinion on the hitting side in the org, basically. It's just kind of how, but that would be awesome. Like,
yeah. And, I mean, you got Fuller. So, I mean, it's just, I don't see that happening. But, I mean, you never know. Maybe they have always wanted to work together and we just don't know. I guess anything's possible. Baseball says he wants Boston's pitching coach.
Okay.
I don't even know who that is. Who
yeah,
is that?
I don't either. I don't I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. Did he get fired? Because I would say, like, I would be interested in Jeremy Hefner, who the Mets just fired, because they had to fire everybody because they weren't going to fire their manager. Like, Jeremy Hefner has been a really successful pitching coach for like 5 or 6 years in New York. And now he's out there. I don't know, you know, what his relationship is with. I mean, this could be this could be the Giants pitching coach. If he has a relationship with Bannister, it could be like literally anybody with all their ties. Indeed. You know, I mean, we saw, right? Like, they have ties to Baltimore. They have ties to San Francisco and anybody else that Bannister has worked with. They have ties to the Brewers now. They have ties to the Diamondbacks because of Josh Barfield. Like, this could be from anywhere.
Yeah, and I've heard rumors of somebody from the White Sox, you know, getting bumped up. And personally, I hope that it is not that, but, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, no, for sure. That would, yeah, yeah. Definitely.
Do you have anything on the MLB side of things here? You got anything playoff related that you wanted to dunk on? Or
generally ball go far, team go far, and the Brewers like destroyed the Cubs without hitting a homer, I think, right? So
yep.
But I think generally, like in a playoff series, if you hit the most homers, you usually win. And we'll see how that goes. Just with some of these teams, I think it'll be weird if it's like Seattle and Toronto in the ALCS.
Yeah.
I'm like not opposed, but that's, you know, those two markets, both of those teams have built well. I have like a string of tweets that's out there now floating around. Did you see B-Fluff retweeted me from earlier in the year? So, cause I'm going to hit old takes exposed. No, so the whole thing was going on with Vlad Guerrero earlier this year where, like, it sounded like all these people are reporting that, like, the Blue Jays couldn't sign Vlad Guerrero, right? And I made the argument that, like, if they couldn't sign him, they should trade him because I thought that the Blue Jays were, like, a fourth-place team anyway. So, you know, obviously they're not a fourth-place team, and they signed him. So I was wrong. But those are my latest bad tweets that are floating around.
I mean, it happens. I mean, it's like I said to somebody else about that whole thing is that sometimes we hear things from people and sometimes that information ends up not being good and it gets people into trouble. So,
yeah
that Grand Slam was pretty nice, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a fun Toronto team.
Yeah. They they had 4 home runs in that game? Does that sound right?
Yeah, and then the Phillies and Dodgers is just like a heavyweight fight. I mean, like, obviously everybody knows that Shohei Ohtani's good at baseball, but, like, good Lord, man. Like, the fact that you can do both of those things at that high of a level is just absolutely absurd.
Not in the same game, though, apparently, because he went 0-4 with 4 strikeouts.
Yeah, I know.
But, yeah. And it just kind of underscores the same problem that the Phillies have had for a few years, which is the bullpen always seems to blow the game somehow or another. They go out and get an elite closer, and the guy in the seventh inning gives up three-run home run.
Yeah, you should throw your closer in the seventh.
Yep. It's all about leverage.
Yeah. I don't know, man. The whole thing is just because, like, one of those teams goes home, like, early. That could be the NLCS in theory, you know?
Yep. Yeah, that's bizarre. You know, I when you see that lineup and it just so happens being the Dodgers against the Phillies.
Yeah.
I was kind of – and then the Brewers and the Cubs, and I was like, well, that's fortuitous for the Brewers and the Cubs.
So some of these openings, we didn't really talk about this, but, like, I know it's only, like, one of 30, but do you think people see Colorado as, like, a fun challenge, or is that just, like, a no chance do you take that job?
I think the problem is – I mean, if you're really up to a challenge, I mean, you're not only are you trying to build a complete baseball team. I mean, you got a couple of guys that are halfway decent, but you're also having to deal with the ownership group there, which has been kind of mentioned as being a problem. So
yeah,
that might be a little bit too steep for some guys. Some guys might say, yeah, well, let's give it a shot and see what happens.
Do you think if you were in charge, like, do you draft and develop pitching, or do you just put all your resources behind mashing and you just, like, spend on pitching? It's so hard to, like, because, like, you have all this money, like, if you have all this money tied up in pitching and you're bad 81 games anyway, I don't know, but I feel like you need bats, right? Because these guys, a lot of times, like, the issue is they build these offensive teams and then they don't hit on the road.
Yeah.
It's
I don't
just,
know. I like,
and do, it's in that move, and it's that division, which is, like, not fun. Like,
do you bump back the walls a little bit there, and then try and negate some of that altitude?
Yeah, maybe. I think it's somebody that just like if you love Denver, which, and Denver's easy to love if you've ever been there. It's pretty cool.
It's pretty neat.
Yeah, I could see taking it. I mean, it's one of 30. And then the manager jobs, I mean, like I think Baltimore's a good one. I think Atlanta's a good one.
That Snitker one kind of,
like, the Giants is, I feel like, not great, but, you know, again, it's San Francisco. It's just a tough division, and they just, free agents don't go there. It does seem like Buster Posey's, like, willing to spend. So I'm curious. I mean, some of these are interesting. There's like a bunch of manager jobs.
Yeah. So Kevin brings up a question here. He says, does Rick Hahn try to get back in? And, you know, I kind of started thinking about this after I saw that question. What do you think about the odds of that happening? Or do you think that he's going to be like one of those,
I think he might be like a senior advisor in a front office, maybe, that he'll just, like, latch on with somebody, but, like, I don't know, like, who his friends are that he, like, so that podcast he just did, right?
Yeah.
Like, if, say, Thad Levine gets the Colorado job, like, is Rick Hahn one of his lieutenants? Maybe, right? Like, I could see that. But I don't think Rick Hahn's getting the Colorado Rockies job. Because you see these jobs, like, did you see the guy that the Nationals just hired? Like, I'm like a front office nerd, and I didn't know who the guy was. Like, Paul Taboni is like one of the assistants in Boston. Like, I'm sure he's brilliant, and I'm sure he's deserving.
Yeah, well,
but,
yeah, that's
like,
the
I didn't know who the person was.
Yeah, there was, like, he had kind of come in as, like, an intern and kind of just worked his way up, kind of like Rick Hahn did, you know, same deal. I had the thought, you know, like, maybe, you know, Rick Hahn, and as James mentions in the comment, MLB Network loves Rick Hahn. They already, you know, they have Steve Phillips too. And there's been other GMs that have come on, and, like, when they don't have a job as GM, they end up as talking heads on the MLB Network or on ESPN when they used to have a baseball show. Like, maybe that ends up being, like, his role if he doesn't get another job. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, he could be really good at that if he were, like, unincumbent. The problem is, I think Jerry has to, like, sell or pass on before, like, Han gives you, like, total honesty, right? Yeah. Like, he's just guarded because, like, him and Kenny, they care for Jerry very, very much. And we probably would, too, if we worked for him as long as they did, you know? So there's just, like, certain things that I feel like he holds back on that, like, if he didn't, he'd be, like, awesome at that job. So I don't know. I mean, we'll see. Like, does he want to, like, move? You know, that was always the thing before. Like, his kids are, like, adult age, I think, now, or at least college age. So
yeah,
maybe if he told the wife, like, hey, like, I'm going to go spend the summer in Colorado or so, like, it would be fine. I don't know. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have an answer for you, Vince. Rick Hahn may never get one. He might get one. I don't know. Depends on who comes up with an opening and whether they like Rick or not, I guess.
Well, all these guys usually do something else first before they get another one. Even like Ben Cherington is the GM in Pittsburgh after he was the GM in Boston. In between that, he was doing player development for Toronto. Like, all these guys go and do this, like, advisor to somebody role somewhere, and then they get back in.
The year is 2026. Does AJ Preller still have a job?
Yeah, I think so. Because I don't know. I don't know what they're... I feel like somebody else would hire AJ Preller in 5 seconds. But yeah, I mean, it's weird, man. The way he operates, you can't do it if they're not going to spend like they spent before, but they're like got a hole, man. And you look at that roster. Have you done the spot track Padres yet? Like,
they have
so many free agents, dude. Like their team is gone, and they'll just qualify offer all these guys and get multiple second round picks and then trade those players at next year's deadline for talent to try to win, yeah, you know,
for but, pitching because but I mean, they can't like, develop it.
Yeah, like they're losing Michael King, Cease, Suarez, O'Hearn. Like they're losing a ton. And some of the guys that they spent on, like the contracts don't look great. But he'll just, this is.
Yeah, you got Yu Darvish for like another 5 years or something.
Yeah, I mean, this is like kind of what he does, though. I mean, he'll just like trade a whole draft class because you have another draft class the next year. That's how AJ, I feel like being a fan of that team would be insane. Like, because you're just like, okay.
No, it's got to be fun for sure.
They just traded their top 10 prospects, but now we have. Like all these guys, like it's just crazy.
Yeah, being a Padres fan has probably got to be a lot of fun, but I would highly recommend to everybody that does it, don't make music videos because they're awful.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not good. And guys didn't do their job. I mean, it is what it is, right? Is it AJ Preller's fault that like Manny Machado and Fernando Tatis didn't hit in a 3-game playoff series?
Yes, it was. Yeah. I will just go ahead and blame it on him.
Bogaerts? Yeah, Bogaerts was a bad deal. It was a bad
deal.
That
was a bad deal, right.
And that was right, but that was before the owner died, right? I feel like that owner was very much like, you know, like if you're the, you know, you're the general manager and your owner walks in and he's like, hey, let's sign Xander Bogaerts for this much money. You just like do it, right? Because your owner says do it. Like, like, I don't know. That one's not great. So Ron Davis has a comment about me calling the White Sox Larry's Hardware Store. Yeah, I appreciate that, Ron. That's just kind of how I think. I think of the White Sox under Jerry Reinsdorf sometimes as like your local mom and pop hardware store, and then like Home Depot opens down the street, and like you refuse to change your ways to compete with them. That's kind of how I feel sometimes.
Yeah, we're not sponsored by him, but Bucama's Aces is my local hardware store that I go to every once in a while.
Yeah, you know what's pretty cool for guys like me who literally don't know how to do anything like around the house? Aces, like handymen, are awesome. Fair enough. Just like want them to like come fix a door or something, and they'll come over and it's like $100 or whatever. Like it's pretty cool. Their service is cool, and you can book online without talking to anyone.
I did not know that. Now you learn something new every day.
Yeah.
Kevin says, man, I really felt like it was the Padres' years to win the pennant, at least. Surprised the way Cubs series went. I was not.
Variance. You know, it's just a 3-game series, man. Anything can happen. You don't hit, you lose.
As soon as I saw that the Cubs drew the Padres, I was like, they can win that series. The Padres, they're I don't know. I just look at them and I see a dysfunctional baseball team. There's always like some sort of like inner turmoil of some sort between different players. And I don't know, everybody seems to be, everybody on that team, at least as far as I can tell from the outside, looks like a me player. And that's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see it. And they have like a whole bunch of, I mean, they do have like the best bullpen ever, but like when you don't score, I guess it doesn't really matter. I mean, cause like you look at that trade now for, what, Mason Miller, I'm going to be fascinated by what they do with him. Like, do they move him to the rotation or are you just fine having the best closer in baseball? So that's one of the offseason storylines that I think is interesting.
I heard that mentioned as a possibility. I'm kind of curious, like, what Mason's velocity looks like when trying to go 90, 100 pitches.
Well, so I think it's like similar to a Grant Taylor thing, because when he was drafted, like, I think he pitched at Auburn, I think. He was like one of these freaky starter type guys. And then the A's rushed him to the big leagues. It's like similar to Taylor. Like, this guy's unbelievable. Put him in the bullpen. And then they did it. And he's unbelievable, right? So, like, I guess I could see where he would want to start, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like, maybe he's just in the rotation next year.
Blank asks, who do you think will be the Mike Talkman of 2026?
Maybe Mike Talkman. Yeah,
it might be.
Well, we kind of talked about, like, I kind of feel like they're going to trade Talkman. Like, I think they like him, but I think they just, I think they're going to add, and I think we're going to see Braden Montgomery pretty quickly. And I don't think they can get rid of Benintendi. So I don't know. I hope they do a little bit better than Talkman. Me and Ian have talked about this. Like they should be spending some money. It's not going to be Kyle Schwarber, but they should add a couple of actual real bats.
Let's hope. So speaking of Braden Montgomery, you just put out an article about the Arizona Fall League. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
So the White Sox have, it's a good group, even though, and I saw, I'm trying to remember who asked about Doug, I believe.
And Fegan. Well, Fegan had a tweet about Braden today, but
yes, he did. Yeah, so Fegan had a tweet about Hagen today, saying that it's going to be a couple of weeks until he shows up. That he's in a good spot, but it's not quite ready. He's still getting to game shape. So that answers the question for baseball. Who asked about that on the Noah front? Doug had asked about that earlier, if Noah was going to pitch in the AFL, and that is a no go. His whole thing is just getting healthy. They want him to get healthy. He's got PT for the next several weeks, and then he's got a couple of weeks off, and then he goes and does some other stuff, and then he's got a report in mid-January. So that is not happening, unfortunately.
Yeah, so Braden Montgomery, they don't seem too concerned. He's just not ready. So a couple weeks for him. Obviously, Sam Antonacci, I think, will be interesting. Boy, does the media love that kid. So these Chicago guys get to talk to one of our guys for the first time, and then my phone blows up. Like, hey, how highly regarded of a prospect is Sam Antonacci? I'm like, don't you guys read our stuff?
Like, no, they don't.
Like, I'm like,
they don't actually care about what's in the minors until it gets like really close.
They're like, wow, this guy's interesting. I'm like, yeah, he's kind of like lefty Mydroth, I've been saying. Like, he's good. Where's he going to play? I don't know. Probably like second, because they have a million of these types of dudes. But I mean, he goes to the Arizona Fall League and kind of does what he's always done. Like, he's going to be further on the map because everybody loves that league, and it's a hitter's league. And that's all that guy does, is get hit by pitches and get on base and get hits. And it's just, yeah, he's fun.
Yeah. Last year, I think this past season, I think he got hit 38 times.
Yeah, he had 38 hits. So yeah, so I think Margulis wrote something about like all the minor league leaders for the Sox or whatever, and I think Bonomer like had more walks than Antonacci, but Antonacci's OBP is higher because he got hit 38 times.
Yeah, which I mean, Bonomer got hit a few times as well, but yeah.
Yeah. So the only he led because of that, and then like Galani is there. I'll be curious to see what position he plays. It's pretty self-explanatory with him. I think it's a guy we like, but he just, like I often say this, right? He's just going to have to hit for a lot more power to be something, but he's good, you know. Especially if he's like relegated to a corner, he's got to mash. Birmingham's really hard. He's the type of guy that could go to Charlotte and, you know, all of a sudden it's like 30 homers and you're like, oh, okay. Yeah, this is more like it. Birmingham's weird. I think that's like it, right? It's three position players. It's Montgomery at some point, Galini, and then Sam Antonacci.
Yeah, I would like to, I would have liked to have had another one, but, you know, I mean, it is what it is. Jack, you get hit 35 times in a season by seeing just short of 2,000 pitches in a season. That's how you get hit 35 times.
Well, and he made some comment like to the Chicago media about how, like, if you're up 0-2 in a count and you're like getting out of the way of like curveballs, like at your feet, like you don't care about winning enough.
Yeah.
And like these people just like eat this stuff up, right? Like it's just like, oh yeah, like I run through a wall. But that's like kind of why he's as good as he is, because he knows like these are the, like, he's not going to hit 20 homers. So he has to get on base and then score as quickly as possible, basically.
Yeah. When I saw, you know, it's like I kind of went and did a deep dive on Antonacci before going on the Au Jus with Beef the other day and just like started looking at like some more like outlier weird stats. And he saw 1,976 pitches last year. I mean, that is insane in 130 games or whatever it was that he played.
How do you think he does on the old school Ryan Fuller Baltimore like hitting system thing, if they're doing that? Like, he's probably like number one in the system, I would think. Like, as far as swing decisions. Yeah.
Yeah, he has to be, absolutely. Because even you know, like maybe I'd say probably the second one in line would probably be like Bergoglio, probably. And then like maybe either probably Zavala after that. But he's got to be number one.
And Bonimer's was a lot better than I was expecting.
He was
I mean, being a teenager in low A and like doing what he did is pretty crazy. I mean, I know we've had some spirited debates this week, like even in our like group chat of guys with Elijah and Dylan, just about like, I think we know who the top nine prospects in the system are, right? But like they could vary, man, like in any order, and just like we argue with each other in the group chat. It's fun. Like, but I mean, like, yeah, I mean, it's just pretty interesting because I think everybody's going to have some of these guys ranked like differently.
Yeah. I think that the order, the top 10 this year, it's like everybody's going to have the, like, probably the exact same. Well, probably at least like nine of the 10 same guys.
I think the first five are pretty easy. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So moving from the hitters here. So they have a nice pitching group going as well, despite missing Noah Schultz, which would have been a lot of fun to have Hagen and Noah there. But you've got Hagen and Connor McCullough, who was, you know, just kind of back on rehab from TJ. And then you've got relievers Tyler Davis, Carson Jacobs, and Harold Rosado, who was a Rule 5 minor league pick. Is that right?
No, he was acquired in the Paul DeJong trade.
Ah, that's what it was.
But yeah, but he's Rule 5 eligible. So the White Sox do weird things with like the Rule 5 when it comes to these like pitching decisions, because sometimes there's just some random reliever there, you know, that they like, or they want to get more innings. But then other times it's guys who you want to get another look at before you protect them for Rule 5 or like whatever. It's not really like that this time. This time it's just that for whatever reason they like, and Jacobs is like a, you know, big hulking dude that throws hard. So like I get that. And then Tyler Davis, like they must just like, or they want to see him in that sort of environment because they think those two guys are options for, because like if those guys weren't on the periphery of like potentially pitching in the big leagues, like I don't know that they're going to the AFL. So that's where I thought like those were just a little bit interesting, I guess. And like you need to send relievers because all the teams need like bullpen arms, basically.
So usually when a top arm goes from a team to the Arizona Fall League, usually they send a catcher. Are you surprised that they didn't send somebody like a Calvin Harris or something?
Yeah, I thought somebody would go, honestly. But I'd have to look and see the Glendale catchers. I didn't really pay attention to it.
It's a Dodgers, Cardinals, and a Blue Jays, I think.
Yeah,
guy.
Yeah. So maybe that's why.
Yeah, which if you did not know this, the teams did move around a little bit. The White Sox, Dodgers, Blue Jays, Cardinals, and somebody else who I'm spacing on right now.
Yeah, are all in the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, the Arizona Fall League's cool. You know, I'm very curious to see Hagen if it's like one start a week or 5 days of rest, or he threw 75 innings, I think. So, you know, I think if he threw 25 more, I wouldn't be surprised. It's 100. It would be 100 innings, and then look, Hagen's kind of back on track for like potential Chicago early next season. You know, I mean, I heard you talking to Beef about it on his show. What was that, last Monday? Mm-hmm. And just like, yeah, like we had questions. I think they were valid, but you know, I think once the velo got up into the high 90s, now I feel much more comfortable that they've like fixed something. The walks are always going to be like an issue, but like nobody hits this dude. And like, how long do we need to see him in the high minors? Like if he's back to his normal good self, I think we see him pretty early next year, honestly.
Yeah. In the second, and I'll talk about this in a little bit here, but in the second game that he pitched in the clinching game of the championship series, he was absolutely dominant for the first four innings. He did walk a couple of guys, but in the fifth inning, you could tell that he was lost out there.
Yeah.
It was like he had lost his release point and his command, and he was all over the place. So,
but dude, how did, like, we're like, I think you're better at this than I am, but like, even I could tell he looked totally different when he was bad. He's yeah. like flying way open and throwing 93. I'm like, I don't know that he's hurt, but there's something wrong. Like, this is like not what he looked like before. But now he's more closed and he's throwing like 98 again.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, I heard from like multiple people on Twitter saying, oh, the whole Hagen thing was overhyped. He was fine.
No, he wasn't.
No, he wouldn't have had to sit for a month because his elbow hurt if he was fine. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't mechanical like, issues. Right. There were and he was throwing like 92 to 94. Like, that's not going to work.
Yeah. Yep. And that is not just a dead arm period. There is something mechanically wrong.
Kevin asked if we see Hagen before Noah in the ML. So, and then somebody else asked, Jack asked about McDougal over Hagen. No, I can't go that far, but like, you know, they're so I wouldn't be surprised if all three of those guys are in the Knights rotation though to start next year. Like, which would be awesome. Like if with rotations that we're used to seeing at AAA with like these vets and like 4A type guys. Like, if they have Noah Schultz, Hagen Smith, and Tanner McDougal to, like, start the year in the Knights rotation, like, that would be pretty nasty.
It would be. I don't know what the results would end up being because, you know, even cans of corn in the major leagues end up going over the field and right, you know, or over the fence in right field over there in Charlotte. So,
well, I think
I
it depends.
Know.
Like, do you want them using that baseball? Like, they clearly wanted Noah to get the challenge. They didn't care about Grant Taylor going there. So we'll see. But, you know, I think McDougal will be on the 40-man roster. I don't know that that means that he's in Chicago, though, right away.
So Jamie says, curious with Hagen and ABS. I will say this, Jamie. Usually, guys are swinging at his pitches and just missing them. ABS is going to be tough. And I don't think that, you know, with Hagen, there's going to be a whole lot of challenge pitches because usually it's fairly clear when he's throwing the ball out of the zone. Like, it's like way up and out of the zone.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And basically, like, if he's 0-2 or 1-2, like, you're out. Like, you know, like, he gets behind early and then his fastball command like lacks. And he also, like, if you've never watched him pitch, he's super stubborn. Like, he doesn't give in. Yeah. It's like he doesn't really care about walking people because he just thinks his stuff is so good that he'll just like get the guy out, the next guy out.
He's generally right, like when he's not walking everybody.
Yeah, I mean, all the trouble that he's gotten into all year was like, you know, he'd walk a couple of guys and then there'd be like a bad play behind him or like there'd be a bloop. It's not like he's out here like given up homers. I mean, like, nobody hits him.
Yeah, it was very seldom that he gave up actual solid hard contact that went in between the chalk. It didn't happen very often. Guys would hit his change up and hit it way foul, but that's usually about it.
Yeah, and the deception was a huge. There were some stuff this week. You can talk about this if you want. There's like a question about Opera, right? But there, so Baseball America, some people have figured out that Christian Opera exists, Ian. They could have just tuned in here sooner. And then some of the stuff plus things on Noah I thought were interesting too.
Yeah, so I was kind of flummoxed by the whole. So Noah ranked with the was it the four seam? I'm trying to remember which.
No,
one it was
a two. I think it was a two seamer because it's like two seam. That's right. The two seam sinker that he throws is awesome.
Yeah, it's a sinker. Yeah. So he ranked in the top 20, but Baseball America made a comment about him ranking so high with the sinker, yet he had problems this year. And I was like, well, yeah, he's been injured the entire year. Where have you guys been?
Yeah, he's been hurt all year.
You can't finish pitches. It's going to be difficult to, you know, for swing and miss stuff and to land your pitches.
Well, and you kind of forget too, like in that list with him is like all righties, because lefties like don't usually throw two seam sinkers.
Yep.
They usually throw four seam. You know what I mean? They're usually high fastball four seamer types. And yeah, it's just, he's a lefty that's massive and throws one of these like pitches that's like diving away.
Yes. And Jack brings up the Opera having the best changeup in the minors. He ranked in the top 20 in four seam slider and had the top changeup in minor league baseball. So in stuff plus, which is kind of a big deal. So,
I mean, you saw Opera live, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's disgusting.
He's very difficult to hit.
I mean, he's like a lanky lefty, like former basketball player who now pumps 100 and his curveball and his changeup is like 10 miles an hour different than his fastball. And he has a plus breaker. Like, of all these guys, like, we like Sam Antonacci. We're big time Tanner McDougal fans. Like, Christian Opera is the one that's going to sneak on the top 100 lists. Somewhere.
Yeah, no, for sure. Go ahead and bring this up. Thank you for the super chat, Trey. We appreciate you. Thanks for hanging out. Thanks for coming in. And thanks for the super chat, as always. We appreciate you. And as Trey says, like the stream, everybody.
Yeah.
Help us in the World Wide Web algorithms.
Yes, that's good. Opera, I wonder if Opera gets the, like, it gets the double A treatment as a 20-year-old. We'll see. I'm really interested to see minor league. I think so too, because I think he's too good to stay in Winston.
Yeah, I think that like maybe you see like a couple of starts in advanced A just to get him to warm up. Possibly.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's possible he could start in double A too. And James Hesterman asks, is it as good as Thorpe's? I don't know, but I do know that his velo differential is like 15 miles an hour, which it is not for Thorpe. Thorpe is like a, 10 miles an hour guy, I believe, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I mean, Thorpe's a 70 change.
Yeah, it's real good.
The rest of Opera stuff is better.
Yeah, 100%. Not to mention the guy hit 102 this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's
insane.
Well, it's another chance on like a prep type guy, right? I mean, because he pitched at JUCO, but like I've just always considered him like a high upside prep guy. They were going to take him out of Wisconsin high school the year prior and couldn't. I think it's well documented now. So yeah, he's just like another one of these super young dudes.
Take that, A's. Take that.
Yeah, they couldn't sign him. That's like one of the dumbest things ever. Imagine not signing.
Oh, Vince, come on now. How are you going to do our man Drew Thorpe like that?
Yeah.
The Thorpedo, it's got a great personality. You just don't see it in interviews anyway. Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, so Kerry thinks that he starts in advanced day as well.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
Makes sense. So as a that's pretty much all I've got on the AFL. Oh, I guess we could talk about Caleb Bonnemer and his MVP.
Oh, yeah. When's the last time like that happened?
I don't
remember it. When I saw it, I was like, and like, I wasn't really expecting it, I guess. Like, he had a monster year, but I was never like, hey, he's the, you know, the Carolina League MVP. But I guess it makes sense after like looking around at like the other people's numbers.
Yeah. I mean, I think like the part of the thing is that he stayed. Oh, happy birthday to Caleb Bonnemer. If you're listening, Caleb, happy birthday.
Is he 20 years old today?
Something like that. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I think he was an older high schooler. So,
yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
It's another one of these, you know, another one of these high schoolers that was too old to draft.
Can't draft him. He's 19.
Yeah.
Can't do it. Not going to do it. I think part of the issue, like, so I think, and this is nothing against Caleb Bonnemer's stats at all, or, and happy birthday, Connor McCullough. Also, like, I don't think there's anything wrong with Caleb Bonnemer's numbers from this year, and I thought he had a great year, but I will point out that Jesus Madé moved on quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to think of,
yeah, guys just like don't stay in low A anymore.
Yeah, and they kept him there a long time, so it kind of gave him time to you know, accumulate some stats, and not that he wasn't great, you know, but he did run into a slump here and there, and he still qualifies as the best player in A ball for that period of time to amass those stats.
Yeah, so, and he had a 400 on base percentage as a 19-year-old in low A. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, walk rate is 16%, basically. K rate's fine at 21. You could argue, I mean, the ISO is like 178. It was good for 10 homers. I'm just like not worried about that part yet, though, because like, I think the questions were like the swing, right? So the swing's clearly fine. The hit tool's fine. He's going to get bigger and stronger. And look, if he stays at shortstop and he's a 25 homer guy at shortstop, I mean, it's a pretty valuable prospect. I mean, it's, you know, we can get into a little bit like some of our conversations like during the week with our friends from the other show. Like, how do you rank these guys, right? Like, I think there are some people who think Caleb Bonnemer should be the number one prospect in the White Sox system right now. I don't know that I'd necessarily go there, but I think you can definitely make the argument for it if he's a shortstop. We haven't seen Billy Carlson play, but that's a pretty highly regarded guy who has drawn rave reviews from people we trust in Arizona, even though it's like fake backfield games. You know, and then you got Braden Montgomery and the two pitchers. So it's a good problem, right? Like, it doesn't really matter who ranks where. But I kind of thought, you know, Bonnemer would stay in that like 70 to 100 range for a while. And then he goes to Winston and does what he does. He's going to be in the top 50 some places.
Yeah. Jack brings up the kid on the Pirates was really good in A-ball. Yeah, he was fine. We're not going to talk about him.
Yeah, he will not ever be named ever again. Yeah. Yeah, my goodness, Connor Griffin's awesome.
So good.
I haven't really looked at it, though. Like, after Connor Griffin, like, how many prep picks were better than Bonnemer was? I'd have to, like, really go study it. It's just – it's why I love that profile, like in that range of the draft, like in the 25 to 45 range, like you take a prep guy and you give him $3-ish million. It's generally a guy who, if they turned down that amount of money and went to college, they'd be a top 10 pick 3 years later. So it's, you know, like, it's why I love the Foskey pick, right? I mean, Foskey goes to Virginia. 2 years from now, we're talking about Foskey like they're talking about Tyler Bell. Like, Tyler Bell looks like, I mean, Tyler Bell from Lincoln Way East turned down the Rays. He's a top 10 college player in the country right now. He's draft eligible as a sophomore. I mean, that dude could be a top 15 pick next year. Like, it's why I love taking these guys like in that range and like overpaying a little bit for them.
Keeps things interesting, at least, you know, it's not all, you know, college guys all in the same spot, which is nice, getting some guys that kind of have a little bit of time to develop. And then if you happen to hit right, they move quick.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think, like, if you told me, like, oh, if you're picking in the top five, you would always prefer to take a college guy. Like, I completely understand, like, that, right? Because you're getting generally, and we've seen the White Sox fail at this twice, you know, with Vaughn and Madrigal. But generally, now you're getting, like, some quick-moving bat that's here, like, instantly, and the high school guys are risky. But you can't be afraid to take the risk with the 38th pick in the draft. You know, it's like, who cares? Like, it's like a shot worth taking when the alternative is like the Steel Walkers of the world, basically.
Yeah. Steel Walker.
I just think, like, it's, you know, the college bats that you get in the 30 to 50 range are maybe big leaguers, but low upside big leaguers.
Steel Walker had a great, he had a fun personality.
Great name.
I wish he would have hit more. Great 80 grade name for sure.
Is he selling homes?
He is. He is a real estate agent. Him and Zach Collins probably have like a real estate network or something.
Dude, I bet he does well.
I have to imagine he's got the charisma to sell a few homes.
He's selling homes to like single mothers in the Texas area.
Hey now.
Yeah. Well, I just mean because he's, you know, people have seen Steel Walker. He's, you know.
All right, so Adrian brings up that Caleb Bonnemer had a 25.6 runs against, three more than second in the Carolina League.
Okay.
Weighted runs average. Yeah. I forget the second in the Carolina League. I think that of the above, prep above guy, average, I can't.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, I can't. So the.
Because Rainer got hurt, right? So,
yeah, I think probably the only guy other than like Connor Griffin was bonkers. I'd say probably the only guy, at least in the Carolina League, I'd have to look at the California League, but I think in the Midwest, but I have to think, I can't think of anybody that I was like, oh, in A ball that was a prep that did that well. I'd say probably the one guy that I could think of otherwise was international, and that's Jesus Mate.
Right. Yeah. And the Brewers are freaks, man.
Yeah.
They have so many of these dudes. Yeah. I just, you know, I think what it means is like Caleb Bonnemer probably would have been like a top 15 pick, probably, like if they had the draft again.
Oh, yeah.
Which is good.
Probably. Yeah. No, for sure. Dancing for houses.
Yeah.
We could come up with some kind of thing that they could do for that. If they sold a house, they'd some sort of freak off.
Jack, Steel Walker over Alec Thomas is so weird. Like I had heard at the time that they weren't interested in Alec Thomas because like his dad worked for the team. And then like, I had also heard that like wasn't true, but like they'd taken family members, kids all the time. And like the one time like they had a good one, they didn't take him. That whole thing like made no sense.
Yeah. Yeah. That whole thing like kind of aggravated me as well. Like the worst part of it was they said that it was because of nepotism. And then they go out and draft Roger Bossard's kid. I was like, what?
Yeah. I mean, I think for that was like the Steel Walker draft. And one of their scouts is like on staff at Oklahoma. Like, I just think it was one of those things where they just thought Steel Walker was like a lot better than he is, and they just felt like they had to have him, and they did that instead. But yeah, I was like not a big fan of that decision. Obviously, when Alec Thomas is like local, you know, he's local too. Like you could sell the whole local thing, like Mount Carmel kid thing.
Yep.
Yeah, Vince. I don't know. Do you want to give Mike Shirley a grade 5 years in, Ian? I mean, I'll tell you the first rounders look pretty good. Like starting with Garrett Crochet, like his first pick was Garrett Crochet, you know, and then he's taken Colson and Noah and Hagen and Billy Carlson. And, you know, like obviously like Jacob Gonzalez doesn't look great, but like the rest of that draft class, I think, is pretty good with Grant Taylor and Opper and Lacombe and Wolko. So, yeah, I think like Mike Shirley is the least of the White Sox problems. I feel very comfortable with him as like that, the guy in that chair, basically.
I don't think it's fair to give him a 5-year grade to be fair.
It's because not fair. Yeah, it's not.
The Jacob Gonzalez thing proves that somebody else made that pick because that's not who he would have picked.
Yeah. And I and honestly, like if he's totally running the show, I don't know that he takes Hagan either.
Yeah. There you go.
Because it's like well documented.
Connor Griffin's probably
here. And that doesn't mean that Hagan's a bad pick. It just like when you're the general manager, this has been like document. Like it's like if you think that guy's a top of the rotation lefty that's in the big leagues in a year and a half, like I get it. Not what I would have done, but you know, I don't even know that it's what the scouting director would have done.
Oh, Kenny Jr. I gotta say, happy that we have dodged that bullet now.
Yeah, there's just so much of this stuff that you don't have to deal with. Yeah. You know, because of this, like, that's why I'm curious, like, you know, coming back to the coaching changes, like, I feel like these are going to be just guys from outside from other orgs, because it's just what they've done. It seems like something that Chris Getz is really interested in doing. You know, like, I'm sure Ryan Fuller even has some hitting guy that him and Will agree on, and Bannister, you know what I mean? Bannister, this will be a pitch. Because like the big league pitching coach isn't in charge of pitching. They're in charge of like that night's decisions and some other things, right? But, you know, I mean, Brian Bannister kind of runs the org on the pitching side.
Howard says, I heard that the Sox were prepared to take Matt Shaw, but the Cubs took him right before Gonzo.
Yeah, that I mean, probably. They probably would have taken Teal, too, who went right before him.
Yeah, that's I heard that one as well. I mean, and that's all well and good. My problem is that Jacob Gonzalez was next on the list for them to take as best player.
Yeah, like there are other players. There were prep guys on the board. Like you could have went a lot of different directions than taking low upside college hitter that they took, basically. I think that's probably the biggest issue. So what do you just before we get out of here. So as far as like cats and like obviously like look, I think it was a lot to just, he's been here. They feel like moving on, whatever. But I mean, like I felt pretty good about the big league pitching development for the most part. Right. But when you see guys like, and like Jonathan Cannon's a bad example because he went down and also struggled, but you see like what Sean Burke kind of turned into in the big, like in the majors. And then he goes down and starts throwing like 99 again. Like, is that some, you know, is that sort of stuff, right? Like something where it's like just not always translating up here.
Yeah. The cats one is, I don't know. Like I didn't, if he had stayed and they had renewed his contract, I would have been fine with that.
Yeah. I wouldn't have cared either. I would have. Okay. Yeah. That's their guy. That's fine.
Yeah. And now that he's gone, I mean, they better make a good pick because if right. you got rid of him and the guy that you get after him's worse, then yeah obviously it's a big deal.
I do know there's a lot of people who talk about how his staffs like walk a lot of people, but I mean, he's had staffs with bad pitchers on him.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think the pitching coach is actively telling guys not to throw strikes, but, you know, his staffs have walked a lot of guys.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it's a... It's kind of one of those things where you wonder if guys are being a little bit not aggressive enough.
Right.
But then again, yeah. You know, it could be any one of a number of other things. So who knows?
Yeah. I mean, the bottom line is Will Venable, I think, feels like he can upgrade. And you've worked enough places and you've watched sports long enough. Like when somebody takes over, like they want their own people generally.
That's usually the way it goes, unfortunately. All right, James, are you good?
All good.
All right, I'm gonna walk us out.
Hey, Uncle Thanks Ted, what's up, buddy?
There he is. I'm gonna go ahead and walk us out. You have been watching / listening to the Future Sox podcast. If you are listening to this in podcast form, know that you can find us every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on YouTube and the Purple app. You can also find this podcast along with all of our written content at futuresox.net. If you're looking for White Sox prospect highlights, you can find them on X at Future Sox and now also here on our YouTube channel. If you love the content and want to support us here at Future Sox, there is a link to our Patreon in our channel description and at futuresox.net. You can also toss up a super chat on our YouTube stream. Also, don't forget to like this stream and subscribe with notifications so you know when we're going live while helping us in the World Wide Web algorithms. The Future Sox podcast is a member of the Just Baseball Media. My name is Ian Eskridge at Daily White Sox. He is James Fox at JamesFox917. We appreciate all of you. Thanks for listening and commenting in chat. You drive this community. We appreciate you guys. Thanks for hanging out. Thanks for being here. We appreciate you guys. We will catch up with you guys next week. Have a great one. Thanks.